I'm Karen. I'm a compulsive reader. Can you hear me okay? It was suggested that I just take a couple of minutes before I tell my story and just talk about the convention briefly. You've probably visited us back there where Randy is. This is the Region 6 Convention. It's being hosted in Ottawa. It's in October of this year. And I actually put the website right here in case, because we ran out of flyers. So if you have any questions, you can go here. You can register there. You can register the hotel there. And sign up to do service. If you have at least a year of abstinence, you can speak at a marathon or a workshop. But there's a lot of other types of service that are needed over the course of the weekend. It's also a bilingual convention, so if you speak French, that would be wonderful. So, and as I mentioned before, the hotel is downtown in Ottawa. It's the Delta Ottawa City Centre. It's just been renovated. It's a lovely hotel. I believe they're trying to organize a bus from Toronto. So there was a sign up, a sheet somewhere. So we don't have these conventions in Canada very often. They're usually down around the New York City, Boston area. So this is a great opportunity for the Canadians to get to a Region 6 convention and hear recovery from around our region. So, all right, enough about that. So I'm Karen, I'm a compulsive overeater. And I'm here to share my story with you. So I came into the Fellowship of Overeaters Anonymous 23 years ago, and I was, I stopped weighing, but I was around 210 pounds or so. I probably got heavier. I didn't really want to see that number anymore. And I don't have 23 years of abstinence. It took me a couple of years of trying to do it my way and do a little more research, but I celebrated 20 years of abstinence last September. So if I make it... Thank you. So if I make it till September 13th of this year, it'll be 21 years. And I'm just so grateful, So how did I end up in Overeaters Anonymous, which is like some people shared earlier, the last house on the block? It's not like, one of my desires when I was growing up that I was going to end up in this 12-step fellowship of Overeaters Anonymous. Basically, I grew up in one of those sort of, quote, dysfunctional families, and there was a lot of physical and emotional abuse at the hands of my father, and I turned to food. It was available. It was easy to do. My dad ran an auction business. My dad's an auctioneer. My brother's an auctioneer. My uncle, my two cousins. So if I'm speaking too quickly, I come by it honestly. So just slow me down if I'm doing it, because I always get a little nervous when I speak. So I know I talk quickly. Apparently, I was just down in New York City last weekend leading a retreat, and I mentioned the same thing. And they listen. Apparently, the New Yorkers also speak quickly and listen quickly, so I fit right in with them. So because we ran this auction barn at our home in the back, there was always a canteen. So when I got to be old enough, I was, and that meant like 12 by my dad's. We were put to work young. I was in the back selling the chocolate bars and the chips and, whatever it was that we were selling back there, and, of course, eating all the profits. As soon as I was 16 and I was driving, I was going to buy the stuff for the canteen and, like I said, pretty much eating anything that was left over and stealing money so that I would then have money to buy more stuff, right? So I ended up in the food addiction quite young, and my brother sort of went the alcohol way and I went the food way. And there seems, when I look at my family history, my cousins, aunts, uncles, they've gone one way or another. It's either alcohol or food. So I think I come by the disease, honestly. Just a couple. In high school, so I grew up in Oshawa, so I'm not far from, I live in Ottawa now. I've been living in Ottawa for many years, but I grew up in Oshawa. That's where my family still is. And when I was going to high school, I remember having moments of clarity, like, you're really eating too much. I never really thought I had a food problem. I just had a bit of a weight problem. Didn't connect, So sometimes I would try and sort of put some willpower to it and get up early and jog and starve myself and, like, no normal eating, nothing like that. And usually, for me, there was a goal. Like, there was a guy I was interested in. There was an end-of-the-year school party. There was a dance. There was a wedding. I mean, there was some occasion that I felt like I needed to look good for. And when you're younger and your metabolism is a little better, I could do it. I could always reach the goal. I could get the weight off when I was young. But then as soon as the goal was here, I started eating again. So, and then I would gain all the weight back with interest. So, We had a cottage at Port Perry area, and we lived there in the summertime. And you, every picture I look back at with me in a bathing suit, I'm completely covered up. I have a towel around me. I have a T-shirt on me. You know, we just listened to that body image talk, which was very good. I mean, I didn't want anybody to see anything, even in the, like, daytime, nothing. I mean, it was, I was covered. So I never liked wearing a bathing suit. So I never felt, and I was picked on a lot about my body with from my dad and my brothers. So I started to believe it. I started to have that false belief, you know, that I wasn't, you know, that acronym for binge, believing I'm not good enough. And so I binged because I believed I wasn't good enough, and I was told that I wasn't good enough, and so I started eating. I went to university in Kingston, Ontario, and I did get a four-year degree there. I spent my third, I studied German, so my third year I was actually living in Germany for a year. I did learn German, but I also learned that the chocolate tastes really, really good in Europe. And I did a hell of a lot of traveling. I had two-month Eurail passes, and I was traveling all over the place and eating lots of chocolate and gaining a lot of weight, and it was just getting more and more out of control. So when I came back from my fourth year at Queen's, I tried to get the whole willpower thing going again. I started doing the starving with exercise always went together. If I was eating, I was watching TV. I always liked the TV with the food together. So anyway, in my fourth year at Queen's, I met the man who became my husband. And I tried, like I probably never weighed more than 160 pounds, but I just kept struggling with my weight all the time, up and down, up and, there was no normal for me. I don't understand normal eaters. Like, what is it with these guys? You know, both my husbands are, I have two, but both my first and second husband, both normal eaters, you know, they can go to the cupboard and take out a big bag of chips. They'll put some in a bowl, and then they'll wrap the chips up and sometimes put a chip clip on. Like, who knew they made such things? They put the chips go back in the cupboard, and they eat what's in the bowl. And those chips could stay there for a week and get stale. Like, that is sick behavior. Well, I tell you, when I was eating chips, they never went back into the cupboard. And, I mean, really, I'm a sugar addict, so I would just cut the sugar with a bit of salt and then go back to the sugar. So the other thing about normal eaters I don't understand is I was at a Second Cup in Ottawa with a sponsee doing step work after a meeting, and this couple came in, young couple, they sit down beside us, they have one dessert with two people and two forks. Well, there's a problem right there. I mean, God forbid, why would you share your dessert? And then, pathetically, they couldn't finish this dessert. One dessert, two of them, and they still couldn't finish it. So I don't understand those people. I mean, I would have licked the plate. I mean, if I didn't care if I was in Second Cup in the public. So anyway, so I've digressed. So back to where was I? So Queens and, well, anyway, so then I got married. I got married in 1985, and I moved to Ottawa. And I don't know about you, but I don't like change. So moving to Ottawa, where I knew nobody, didn't have a job, was a big deal for me. I needed the food. The food was my coping mechanism. I mean, I don't know about you, but I, as an addict, I don't do something for nothing, right? So I'm getting something out of it. And that food had payoff for me. You know, it was a coping mechanism, a friend, it sedated, it pushed my feelings down. So I was, anytime I went to the food, I was getting something out of it. And there was pleasure initially, and maybe in the first bite. So when I moved to Ottawa, I got a little bit depressed. I didn't have a job. And when I did get a job, it was in the food court. I was a travel agent, so I was in the food court of the mall. And I remember leaving that store. When I worked at the mall till 10 o'clock at night, I'd leave the store alone to go across to Treats Cookies because I couldn't spend a couple hours not eating, so I had to have the stuff, right? And so I just kept eating. Change was not good for me. And I went to see an eating disorder psychiatrist, and this woman said I was an bulimic. Except that I didn't actually purge or exercise, so I don't know why. But so I was just overeating. I'm really just a compulsive overeater, not a compulsive eater, compulsive overeater. So she tried to get me into a program they had at the Civic Hospital for people with eating disorders, but you had to throw up. So I tried. I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. So I didn't get it. And then I felt like a complete failure because I couldn't even get into the stupid eating disorder thing. So it's not easy, yeah. Anyway, so then she put me on an appetite suppressant, and I don't know about you, but I never was eating because I had an appetite. I mean, I was angry, bored, happy, sad, scared. I mean, it was all emotional eating. There was no appetite, so the drug did literally nothing, and then I got pregnant. And then I thought, well, this is great. I can, like, eat for two legally. No one will notice. So I did, and I gained 60 pounds in the pregnancy. And the doctor kept telling me, you know, you got to really watch. You're putting on a lot of weight. And so she suggested that I lay off the ice cream. But on the other hand, she's telling me my blood pressure is good. So I basically ignored that, and the blood pressure was good, which means I'm okay, so I'm just going to keep eating. It was funny because Eric's going to be 24 next month. So when he was born, they put me into the hospital and said, you know, he's a really big baby, and you're 2 weeks late because they had the date wrong. So they tried to induce him, and he wouldn't come out, and they tried to induce him again. I mean, he's still a stubborn kid. And anyway, so finally I had the baby, and then I nursed him for 6 months. And, you know, they come out with new chocolate bars when you don't eat them. Like, there's a whole six-month period where I wasn't having any chocolate because I had a colicky baby. So I had to eat, you know, nice, healthy, sensibly, I guess. And so as soon as that baby was weaned on January 1st of 1989, I didn't say to myself, I'm going on a chocolate binge for the next 3 months, but that's literally what I did. And I made up for lost time. And see, again, I had 6 months where the food was somewhat controlled for the baby, but it wasn't for me, right? Anyway, I took that baby out in snowstorms. I mean, Ottawa, we get snow. It's not like Toronto. I mean, where it gets cold and snowy in the winter. I took him out and left him in the car to get into Max Milk or Becker's to get my drug of choice because I never left it in the house. I always got rid of it because I was going to be good tomorrow. And then, of course, tomorrow never came. And in three months, by April 1st, I got on the scale and I was 201, and I wasn't pregnant. And I thought, now how did that happen? Like, was I unconscious? Like, when did this happen? Like, over a three-month period, I gained a lot of weight. And my answer to the 201 and feeling completely hopeless was to go and eat, because that was my solution for all of my problems back then. Of course, it wasn't a solution, right? Anyway, in May of 1989, my husband said, you know, we're having some marriage difficulties, and you know why that was, right? I mean, it's a disease of isolation, and as we talked earlier, you know, when we were eating compulsively, I preferred the food to relationships. I preferred the food to sex. It was all about the food. So we went to this marriage counselor through his EAP program at work, and she told us to go to this woman told me about three different options, but one of them was Overeaters Anonymous. I never heard of it. I didn't really know much about AA. I didn't know about spirituality at all. I thought it was religion. I didn't know the 12 steps. So I was really, really new when I walked in the doors May of 1989. And all I really wanted to do was get thin, right? I just wanted to lose the weight and leave. And then I noticed that there were thin people in the room, and I went up to them and I said, why are you still here? But I guess that's good. Like, they're still there, and they, you know, my focus was physical recovery, right? So it was nice to know that people had lost weight. That's what I really want to know when I'm a newcomer. Are people losing weight in Overeaters Anonymous? Because that's what I wanted. So anyway, I had a bit of a slow start because I had about 3 years of sort of in and off, out of doing more research. I never left the program. I hung around. We have an open speaker meeting on Wednesday night, and I hung around at the open speaker meeting. I didn't talk to anybody. I sat at the back with my arms crossed. I wasn't being very friendly. We had a break back then in the meeting, and I hated the break because I just didn't want to have... I was so afraid of people. I just was afraid to speak to anybody. But then I started going to some of the closed meetings, and then I noticed that a lot of the people that I was kind of sort of chumming with, that I'd sort of gotten to talk to and got to know, all had this one particular sponsor. So I figured, well, this is a sponsor for me because these people are all losing weight, so I'm going to ask her to sponsor me. So I did, and then I never called her. But if you had come up to me and said, Karen, have you got a sponsor? I could say, yes, I have one. But that's, I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to, like, what to say to her, and I never trusted that she would know because she was an old-timer. And she was a very strict person who didn't call her sponsees ever. So anyway, so that didn't work out too well. And then I got pregnant again and gained, of course, more weight because I was on and off and on and off. My daughter just turned 21 in February, so she likes to think she's older than me because I'll be 21 in September, one day at a time. But the other thing, the other part of my story at the very beginning was my friend had come over and said to me, you know, here's some Jane Fonda exercise tapes. You're getting a little fat. Maybe you should exercise. She's my best friend still today. And I listened to her because I'm a people pleaser. And I thought, okay, I could try these things. So I put the baby up for his nap and I go down and do my Jane Fonda, which those are not safe exercises anymore. That's back from the 80s. And I actually got pretty good at them. And heaven forbid if the baby would wake up before I was done, because I come first and I'm doing my exercises so he could stay up there and cry till I finished. I mean, this was not an abstinent person. This was a stark raving lunatic, but that's what I was doing. And then, of course, I lost a lot of weight, like 50 pounds, but it was unfortunate timing. It was 2 weeks before Christmas. Now, how do you get through Christmas without eating chocolate? Not in my family. I mean, we had rows and rows and rows of, you know, we'd have the turkey dinner at noon, and then there was just so much food laid out on the table. So I kind of manipulated my way into it. I phoned a member who was not my sponsor and said, do you think I could eat snacks between Christmas and New Year's just to get through the Christmas season with all the socializing? And she didn't know anything about me. And she said, well, you know, do you think you can do that, honestly? And of course I said, well, yes. Of course I can. So I felt like I had permission, so I started eating snacks. Because at the beginning I was 3 meals a day, nothing in between. Which my dad always used to say, it's something like what Bob said earlier today. Karen only eats 1 meal a day, starts in the morning when she gets up and finishes when she goes to bed at night, because I didn't eat during the night. So 3 meals a day, even though they might have been banquet size, was better than nonstop eating. I mean, I was losing weight, right? So anyway, I started eating those snacks, and then before you know it, I picked up a resentment. Oh, I was doing the OA waltz, by the way. You know, steps 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, because step 4 was not for me. And I made a decision basically to do nothing, right? Step 3 is a decision to take the action with the rest of the steps, which I didn't do. So I was on the OA waltz and the 2-step because I was doing service. I admitted I was powerless and I jumped up to step 12 and started doing service. The ones in between weren't for me. And so, of course, when I picked up a resentment just before Christmas, well, what did I do? I'm sitting at work. I'm a travel agent in the mall. I'm the only one there. It's night. And on the counter here are some Hershey Kisses for the customers. And I thought, you know, I'm not that bad. I've lost my weight. I'm feeling pretty cocky. I don't think I'm as bad as you guys. I don't really need to do this stuff. I can eat one of those. And I did successfully eat about 3 of them that night, 5 the next night, and then you know what happened. By Boxing Day, I was binging. And then I said to myself, well, you know, you're binging. Unfortunately, I had told Grandma not to make the fudge that year. Because I can't eat it. So who cares about anyone else? Don't make the fudge. Because I can't eat the fudge. And then, of course, when I ended up binging, I wanted the damn fudge. I was so mad at myself for telling her not to make it. She listened to me. So I had to get more creative and spend more time out in the store getting my drug of choice, which is sugar. And so then I said, well, you know, it's a week. So from Ottawa, I went to Oshawa for the week to visit the family. I'll just get back on track in the new year. Right, well, who has control over relapse, right? My 1 week turned into a year and a half and 60-pound weight gain. So there's no control over relapse. So if you've got it, if you've got your abstinence, it's a hell of a lot easier to just keep it and stay in the rooms. So like I said, and of course the binging got worse. This disease progresses, right? So I got bigger, I had headaches, I had stomach problems, I had bowel problems, I mean, just whatever, you know, I couldn't sleep at night, I mean, just nonstop eating. And hardly could I have a relationship. I mean, I had 2 young kids. I'm an at-home mom. I was literally going to the Tim Hortons and getting the little ones for them and putting them in front of the TV in the basement, and I was eating the big ones. I mean, that was what I call existence. I mean, that really wasn't life, right? And this is, you know, this is a disease, and I believe this is life or death for me, and I choose to live today. So today I have to put in the action in the work into my program. So basically what happens is I just kept getting worse. My friend was the special events chairperson who was planning a retreat in Ottawa. The Region 6 trustee, the one before you, was coming to do the retreat. And I signed up. I mean, she's like, why don't you go to the retreat? Like, at least put yourself in a place where you might get some recovery. I mean, there's no magical cure about being at something like this retreat or a convention. I mean, you do still have to be willing. But by the time I got to that retreat, I was very willing. So I signed up to go. I didn't really want to go anymore. My husband kept saying I was going to take 2 suitcases, one with food, one with clothes. I was pretty like, why did I sign up for that stupid thing? And then the night before, it was a Thursday night, September 12th, 1991, that I hadn't written in my journal in like a year by this point because I was in relapse. And my husband was at work because it was late at night and the kids were sleeping. So Colleen would have been about 6 months and Eric was three. And one of them cried out and I went into the room and I just had this clarity. Like this disease does not just affect me. It affects my children, my marriage, my relationships. You know, and I was so self-centered that I couldn't see that. And I realized, like, someone else should be raising these kids because I'm not present. And I went back to my room and I wrote in that journal. I wrote in that journal, and it's a good thing because I keep reading it on my 1 year, on my anniversary. And I got down on my knees and I said, God, help. That's all I said. I figured I'd just screw it up if I said a bunch of stuff. Like, God knew. I just said, God, help. And then I got on my knees again the next morning and I said, God, help. And I haven't eaten compulsively since that moment. So that's 20 and a half years ago. And I went to that retreat with a whole new attitude. It was like, let's talk to the people I had on pedestals. You know, we talked about having people on pedestals. Let's talk to these abstinent people. Like, what do you, I've been here for 3 years. Like, what do you do? How do you do this? I didn't have a clue. I was hanging around with the fellowship. And the fellowship supports us, but it's the program that changes us, right? And I had to get into the big book. This is my copy of the big book that's extremely well used, and my friend in Ottawa had it rebound for me because it was all the pages were out of it. And so I basically put as much energy into recovery as I had been putting into the disease, which is a lot. I mean, just hiding the garbage after one of my binges was a big ordeal, or I'd throw the stuff in the garbage and pour soap on it because I knew I'd take it back out. I drove all around the city of Ottawa, Richmond, Bakery, everywhere just to get what I wanted. And in a lot of restaurants in those days, they didn't even have drive-thrus. I mean, I had to actually walk into Tim Hortons and this fat woman buying donuts. I couldn't hide in my car. So I surrendered to the program. You know that same sponsor? I started using her. She gave me homework on all of writing and homework on every single step, not just the fourth step. There was writing on every step. She gave me questions. She said, read this, write this, we'll get together next week. And we just did that with all of the steps. And I completely fell in love with the big book. I'm not an alcoholic, but I totally relate to this book. And we didn't have OA literature back then. We had the AA 12 and 12 in the big book. And so that's sort of what my recovery is based on. And I just start, and I had young children. I went to the Wednesday night meeting every week. We had a closed meeting followed by an open speaker meeting. So I felt like I was getting two meetings, but I was only out one night. And I just started recovering. And I followed my 3 meals a day food plan. I didn't weigh and measure my food. We didn't have email back then. I didn't call it in. I didn't do any of that stuff. I didn't have a regular call with my sponsor. I kept it simple. I was really building a firm foundation in the steps with my higher power. God as I understand him. And I started to learn about prayer and meditation and and I always pray on my knees now. I like that position of humility. For me, that works. Maybe when I'm old and I can't use my knees anymore, it'll be different. And so I didn't exercise. I just focused on living and staying abstinent and the steps, getting into the big book. And then about a year into my recovery, someone asked me if I would sponsor them. And so I started sponsoring, and I love sponsoring. And at one time, I made it like a full-time career where I had 17 sponsees, and I was going from one to the next. And I'm like, there's something wrong in this picture. You know, I'm not Miss OA, and there's no pride in having 17 sponsees. I did let some of them go, and some of them just ended up going on to someone else, and I have a reasonable number now. And so I started doing service. I really, really encourage people to do service. And I did local service. I got on intergroup. And then a friend of mine who actually lives in Toronto now was going down to the Region 6 Assembly in Albany. And she said, you know, we had a scholarship. So she said, well, why don't you come with me and we'll go shopping because it was near Boston. I didn't care about the assembly. I was going for the cross-border shopping. So, because I didn't know what it was. It was some business meeting, right? Well, I fell in love with Region 6 Assemblies and I've never left. I kept going for like 5 or 6 years. In our intergroup, you can go 5 years as a rep, and then I get one of my sponsees to run for the position, so then I could go with them. So, and then in 2002, someone said, well, why don't you run for vice chair? And I'm like, really? So I put an application in at the last minute. I became vice chair for 4 years. And then in 2006, I became the chair of region. And I've been the chair of region since last September. So 5 or 6 years, because I had a partial term. And then, so, and when you're chair of region, you go to World Service. And I had never done that before, because we couldn't afford to send anyone from our intergroup. So anyway, so I'm definitely a service junkie. And now I'm chair of this convention that we're doing in Ottawa, the Region 6 Convention. So yeah, so I really, really like, but I still think the best service we can do is one compulsive overeater talking with another, sharing their experience, strength, and hope. So, I mean, there are people in the room here today that I've met because I've done service, or I met them in Albuquerque or Albany, or, so, yeah, it's an amazing, I don't even know what my time is. How am I doing?
You got about 10.
Okay, now I've lost track where I was. Okay, so let me just go back. So I'm an at-home mom, and recovery is going along well. I'm doing service. In the year 2000, my grandmother died, the Y2K. So grandma died. My dad was diagnosed with liver cancer and was told to get his affairs in order because they thought he'd have a year to live. And my mom, who's a cancer survivor already because she lost this right bone here, the hip bone, and they damaged her sciatic nerve, so she's been in a wheelchair. She had a bowel blockage and almost died in the hospital. And I was having marriage difficulties. So also at the beginning of the year 2000, and my dad didn't die very quickly. In fact, he didn't get his affairs in order. He actually got busier. So when he did pass away in the year 2006, we had a whole mess of stuff to clean up. I mean, he had taxes he hadn't paid for years, and he had 5 properties and a few Ontario limited numbered companies. We still have one. We haven't been able to clean it up yet. So there was a lot of stuff going on there. And then I ended up separating from my husband in 2001. And I bought a house sort of in the same neighborhood. And then I went, you know, from having my kids all the time, 1 week on, 1 week off. And then I took a temporary job in a grocery store in Bell's Corners, and I'm still there 11 years later. I'm not there very much, 1 or 2 days a week. It's a community store. I kind of still like it, even though I complain about it. And then I took at Algonquin College, I took a convention and meeting planning course, so hopefully I know what I'm doing with planning this convention. And I did work a little bit in convention and meeting planning in Ottawa, but I don't speak French. And so coming from this area, living there, if you don't speak French, it can be difficult sometimes to move forward with work. And then in 2002, about a year after I was separated, I met my current husband online, and we got engaged in 2004. We had a blending situation because he has 3 kids and I have 2. They're all roughly the same ages, and that had its challenges, and there was a lot of step work going on. And we got married in May of 2006, and then in September of 2006, my mom called and said, you better get down here, and my dad just kept getting worse and worse. And my dad always was close to 300 pounds. He may have been one of us, but he had lost probably 100 pounds just because of the cancer, right? And so I went down to help my mom keep my dad at home and take care of him. And the day that he died, which was September 9, 2006, I had gone into the hospital to see if I could get any food into him at dinner. And I just had this intuition that my mom should come up to the hospital in the evening. And we live close to the hospital. So I said to my mom, you know, I think we should go to the hospital tonight. And she said, oh, no, I've got this and that, and we'll go tomorrow. I said, no, Mom, I think we need to go tonight. So my husband and I wheeled her up, because it was 5 blocks, up to the hospital. We got there at 7. My dad died at 8:15. There was, like, that was God, someone was speaking through me. And then 3 days later, I ended up in Albany at the Region 6 Assembly because I was running for the chair position and you have to be present. And then in October, I was helping my mom sort through the mess that my dad left behind. And I happened to feel a lump in my breast. And I never really checked my breast, so I can't tell you whether that was there before or not, but I didn't think it was. So I went back home, and I was in no hurry to have it tested out. But in the long run, after a series and series of tests, in January of 2007, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. And so I had, they gave me a 2-week window for my surgery, and I already was doing, I was leading a retreat down in New Hampshire. So I went down to New Hampshire, led a retreat on the weekend, came home Wednesday, I had surgery. And the following Monday night, I was at my regular OA meeting. I didn't skip a beat. I couldn't move my arm. They took out all my lymph nodes as well. And I was a little drugged up on medication, and I was sore, but someone picked me up and drove me to that meeting. I had a pillow and everything. And I went to my meeting, and I recovered from that. I had radiation treatment, and I'm on medication, which they just took me off. So my oncologist is telling me about this medication, and it is to prevent the estrogen from the breasts. And he tells me about some of these potentially dangerous side effects. From every medication, right, there's pros and cons. You know, there's always a negative. And so one of the main ones that I heard was weight gain, because it slows down the metabolism. And I was 47 then, so I'm 52 now. So I'm already going through menopausal years, and things are starting to slow down already, right? And he's like, so women gain like 10 to 15 pounds average on this medication. And I'm like, oh, I don't really like the sounds of that. And he says, well, would you rather be thin or cancer-free? And I said, oh, let me get back to you on that. So I believe I'm cancer-free. I'll find out in June because I just went through another series of tests. But really, I did gain some weight in abstinence in recovery. And I used to be one of the ones back in my 30s who was judgmental of people gaining weight because I didn't understand it. I was young. I had a good metabolism. But now that I'm older with things slowing down and the medication, anyone who's on medication can relate to it. It does. A lot of medications promote weight gain. So my sponsor and I are now in the process, we have been in the process of trying to adjust my food, but you know, damn it, I've given up so many things. I get a little stubborn about having to make more changes to my food, but I know it's coming. I know it's going to happen. So a little bit about my kids. So I have three stepchildren ranging from the age of 21 to 26. One lives in France, one lives in Peru, and one lives in Vancouver. And then my two children that are 21 and 24 both live in Ottawa. They're at Carleton. And they don't live with me, so we have an empty nest situation. And I don't know where the woman is that shared about her dog earlier, but I could totally relate to that. So my husband and I have been married 6 years, and we have this beautiful golden retriever who's 10. And, dog spelt backwards is God. And I see so many qualities of my higher power in that dog. And she talked about that earlier, you know, this unconditional love and acceptance and just an awesome relationship to have. I never had a pet in my life. I remember when I got this dog, he was 5 weeks old. And I put him in I didn't really know what I was doing, but I got this crate. And my daughter had told me this would help her get through the divorce, was getting this dog. So she picked up one, a male golden retriever. She named him. But he became my dog. And that thing gets up in the night. He's a baby. Yeah, he's up two or three times a night, and we're all getting exhausted. And so I'm like, I called the breeder to see if I could take him back, because I only had him for like 3 or 4 days. I couldn't stand it anymore. She said, you have him here by 5, and I'll give you your money back. So then I called my sponsor. She's like, what are you doing calling me at 6 in the morning? Because I am not a morning person. And we had a little chat, and basically, I kept the dog, and the shift in attitude was, this is my dog, not her dog. She's 10. What do I expect from her at 10? And I bought in. She was starting to gain some weight, and I bought into the line of, you know, if I have a dog and walk it, I'll lose weight, Mom. So she didn't walk the dog much. So, and her weight took care of itself, right? I can't control that. Anyway, so I just love my dog, just completely. So I have a good life today. Like I say, I work part-time. I spend a lot of time doing OA service. I'm happy to be here today, you know, to speak and to talk about the convention. And I just want to point out a couple quick things because my time is almost up. When I got abstinent, my sponsor referred me to page 30 when I was, you know, 20 years ago. And so we were, you know, talking about, like, step one, in my head, I knew I was a compulsive overeater because I was relating to the stories. I mean, I sat here for 3 years and listened to you. But I wasn't convinced, like, I had that word be convinced put on one of my medallions because I need to be convinced that I'm powerless over food and I need to be convinced that there is a solution, right? That life will be different. That if I work these steps, life will be different. And so it says on page 30, we learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were, it says alcoholics, but I'll read it in compulsive overeaters. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion that we are like other people or presently maybe has to be smashed. We, alcoholics, compulsive overeaters, are men and women who have lost the ability to control our drinking and, in our case, compulsive eating. I can't control my eating. And it says here later on, we are like men who have lost their legs, they never grow new ones. Like my mom's lost her leg. It's there, but I mean, it doesn't work. she has to wear a brace and she's in a wheelchair, and like that leg's never, that use of that leg's never coming back. And it's the same with my compulsive overeating. If I ever was a normal eater when I was younger, like I'll never, it's not coming back. I'm never going to be a normal eater. In fact, my mom was just in a car accident 2 weeks ago in Oshawa, and the woman that hit the car, who was charged, both my mom and my sister-in-law was the driver, broke their right wrist, must have been the airbags or something. So now we had to put my mom into a nursing home because she literally cannot get in and out of the chair or in and out of bed, and she hates it. So I was there last night doing the work of the PSW myself. So we're going back there tonight, and we're going to try and move her out of there and find some other situation. So I've had a lot of stuff going on lately, and my daughter fell down the stairs and sprained her ankle. She's on crutches, and then she's starting to walk again, but she works as a server at a restaurant, and they fired her because she can't serve. So I got all this sort of family stuff, right? But OA teaches me how to live abstinently, right? To be abstinent and to live and accept life on life's terms. You know, I may not always like life on life's terms, but I don't have to eat over it. And I just want to, I'm ending, don't worry. We had a retreat a couple years ago in Ottawa, and the woman who was leading the retreat, actually it was quite a few years ago, because I always say this now too, was suggested to read 2 pages of the Big Book every night, and read it out loud to your dog, to your cat, to your husband. There's so much on, and just 2 pages, because there's just so much in the Big Book, and just really think about what's on those pages. So I actually did that a couple of times, and I found this really neat promise on page 100 that I absolutely love, and I'm just going to end by sharing this. Both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances. That's a pretty awesome promise. So anyway, I'm grateful to be here today. Thank you for having me, and hopefully we'll see you in Ottawa in the fall.